today on 4CA. John McKenzie, 1-300-872-911.
Yes, sadly, it's the start of the stinger season today, and the timing's, of course, most unfortunate because we're just heading into the steamy summer season. It's already steamy. It's been lovely being able to go out in the water and have a bit of a dip, not worry about the stingers. But now, of course, from today onwards, the warnings are out there, and, of course, with the northerlies blowing, it increases the risk of Irukandji, for example. I'm just reading this. This is a gentleman that's doing some studies, and it's very interesting indeed. Just quickly, according to the Department of Health, a sting from a box jellyfish causes severe pain. We all know about this one. We've heard about it for decades. So, and then it goes on to talk about Irukandji symptoms. Normally occur around 30 minutes after a sting, including severe pain, increased heart rate, vomiting, and in rare cases, damage to the heart. Now, lots of people think we've known about Irukandji for as long as box jellyfish. Well, not really, because I do remember talking to then Premier Peter Beattie on the program one day and said, oh, we've got an issue up here with these stingers called Irukandji. And he said, what's an Irukandji? So it's a matter of these things coming to prominence in the last, well, couple of decades. Now, James Cook University stinger expert and PhD candidate Scott Morrissey says it's difficult to tell what factors influence the presence of more deadly jellyfish some years over others. He goes on to say this, and no secret how excruciating the sting can be. He is not kidding. Incredibly painful, he said. Some describe it as like someone taking a power drill to your lower back. You can vomit for up to 12 hours. Your heart rate increases. And, of course, potentially can lead to a heart attack. Now, this is the key sentence. He's working on developing a forensic genetic tool which can detect the presence of box jellies in the water. Now, instead of spending hours and hours dragging nets, he said we could simply take a water sample and look for the DNA in the water. And he's on the line, Scott Morrissey at JCU. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
This could be revolutionary.
Yeah, it's a really exciting technology.
How did you get onto it? I mean, did you actually start of your own volition searching out this concept, or did someone say, listen, there might be a possibility. Can you investigate it for us?
Yeah, so eDNA has been around for about a decade now, but only really in the last couple of years, maybe 3-4 years, have we and other scientists really started diving into using it for detecting, in my case, deadly box jellyfish, but also invasive species and pretty much any critter that is quite difficult to find with traditional sampling techniques.
Tell me, in terms we can actually have access to, what is in the water that you can actually detect and how?
Okay, yeah, so as an animal like moves through their environment, they leave behind DNA in the form of skin cells, mucus, saliva, and this material, as it contains DNA, is what we call environmental DNA or eDNA. And we can go into the environment and we can take water, soil, even air samples, and through use of PCR, which may sound familiar from COVID times, we can examine this DNA and determine if a particular animal is present or not in the environment. So it's kind of like forensic science.
This is just fascinating. I'm just wondering what other applications it would have. I mean, we've had stings up here recently from blue bottles. We get stings and they're shockers too, and they leave scars from box jellyfish leave scars. But Irukandji can be absolutely agonising. Could you pick up possibly Irukandji?
Yeah, so because every species has DNA, you can apply this technology to anything, any species. I have colleagues here at JCU working on crazy yellow ant, cane toads. I work on box jellyfish. I have a colleague that's working on Irukandji jellyfish over in WA. It can be applied to anything.
Wow. How far away till you make the really significant breakthrough and say, guess what, we can introduce this technology now and we're going to start getting a much safer environment for swimming? How far away could that be?
We could start working on it anytime, really. We just need to get the funding to be able to do it. For my PhD work, I've made a few leaps in this technology. Particularly surrounding jellyfish, we've been able to use it to find their elusive winter stage. It's super exciting. So it won't be too far away,
wow.
Really.
This is bloody wonderful. As much as I appreciate the Nets going in, we all know their shortcomings. And as much as we like the Nets being there, they're often kilometres away from where you want to have a swim. I know people who head up to Port Douglas from time to time, even in January and February, they say, oh, bugger it, it's too hot, I'm just going to take a punt. And every time they do, I think, oh, my God, you take a hell of a risk.
Yeah, I do not want to be stung by these jellies. They're incredibly painful.
Yeah, exactly.
But the best advice I can give is to always wear a stinger suit.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the best shot at avoiding being stung.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully as soon as you make a breakthrough, you'll let us know, Scott, because we're all hanging out for it.
I will do, will do.
Scott Morrissey, thank you. He's the PhD candidate at our James Cook University. He's down at the Townsville version.